I finished making the changes. I remember looking at the time on my computer, and it was 8:52, and my talk started at 9. So as I walked into the auditorium, I had this, you know, enormous weight lifted off, and I just felt great.
Welcome to This is Physics, the Physics Magazine podcast. I'm Julie Gould. Ten years ago, almost to this day, Joseph Incandela and Fabiola Giannotti took to the stage in CERN's main auditorium to present the results of a decades-long search for the Higgs boson, a fundamental particle that explains how all the other fundamental particles we encounter in this universe have mass. The voice you heard earlier was the voice of Joseph Incandela, as I asked him to relive the moment for me when he made that presentation in front of a packed auditorium and an international virtual audience. Incandela is a professor of physics at the University of California, Santa Barbara, and at the time of the discovery, he was one of the leaders of the CMS experiment at CERN.
So it was completely the opposite of what you might have expected, that the pressure would be on as I walked in. But I had been under, you know, so much stress, as had been the whole collaboration, trying to get all of this ready, that it was completely the opposite.
Well, and what was it like then to be on stage and to give that talk and to see the reaction of the audience there in front of you when you told them the results that you had?
It was a big science result where there were thousands of people involved, that all of them were really needed. But it was a unique event, I think, in world history, or possibly unique in the sense that we had, you know, 50, 60 countries involved for 25 years. How often do you see that, where people will work together with a single purpose in mind for that long? So in preparing the talk, I knew this would be a historic moment, you know, and I wanted to make sure that we were ready to present that.
So Incandela and the CMS team spent a lot of time preparing the data, and the final result was a graph with a bump in it that signaled the discovery of a new particle. And when this slide came up,
the entire audience gasped simultaneously, very strongly. And it really almost, I mean, it was a shock to me. I mean, it was, I've never been in a room where, you know, 500 people gasped simultaneously. And when I introduced the four lepton channel, Higgs decaying to two Zs, each decaying to two leptons, and I said that the combination gave five sigma and the place erupted, I realized that I'm not going to get any tough questions. They're convinced. And this is really a celebration. You know what I mean? And then I started having a lot of fun with it, really, and really enjoying the whole event and just realizing this is something the whole field has been working toward. And everyone knows we've got it, and it's just wonderful, and they're celebrating. And it was just a joy, I have to say. For that day, it was just a real joy.
John Butterworth, who's a professor at University College London and one of the group leaders with the ATLAS experiment that was also looking for the Higgs boson, was in London, England at the time of the announcement. He's been working with the ATLAS experiment since the 1990s, and in 2012, as a group leader, one of his roles was to be at Westminster in London to talk to the media and answer questions about the discovery.
One of the funny things was when we finally declared, well, this is a discovery, there's a new particle there, and they're all going, so you found the Higgs? And we went, oh, well, actually, we're not sure it's the Higgs. We know it's a new particle. And it was like visible frustration on the come on, man, tell us you found the Higgs. We wouldn't quite say it was consistent with the Higgs boson. Yeah, what do you mean? Is it the Higgs? We don't really know yet. We've got to measure a bit more about it. Of course, that's a lot of what we've been doing the last 10 years is characterizing it. And actually, it does stack up. It is the standard model Higgs, right? I mean, that's what it is, a Higgs boson, basically. We know that now, but on the day we weren't quite prepared to say that because we didn't quite have all the measurements we wanted to be completely confident.
But just because there wasn't 100% confidence at the time doesn't mean that the particle physics community wasn't excited.
Some of the media, not many really, but I mean, they're doing the job basically. They're trying to find out, is this a corporate line, or can we dig behind and find the real story kind of thing? And basically everyone they pointed a microphone at, from the first year PhD student up to the emeritus professor who retired 20 years ago, was just so excited. There was, clearly no corporate line going on here. So no, okay, everyone really is excited about this, aren't they? So that was nice.
The preparation for announcement day started a few weeks earlier, in mid-June 2012, when the two experiment teams, Atlas and CMS, had internal unblinding meetings. In these meetings, the team were looking at their Higgs data properly for the first time, because before this, they'd been doing something called a blind analysis.
You are not allowed to look into your real data until you have everything else in your analysis set up, just to be sure you're not biasing yourself. Because there's plenty of ways that you can do. It's like, well, you can make a fake bump by just like doing lots of tweaks here and there on the kind of physics you're doing, the kind of selection that you're doing. And then we have something that is called unblinding. So you go, you approve your analysis, everybody scrutinizes everything but the thing you're looking into. And if everything looks good, then you're allowed to look at your data and say, hey, is there a bump? There's no bump.
That's Flavia de Almeida Dias.
I am a Brazilian physicist who is currently working at the University of Amsterdam in Niekerk in the Netherlands. And I am currently part of the Atlas collaboration at the LHC. But during the Higgs boson discovery, I was a PhD student at the CMS.
Can you actually believe that it has been 10 years since the discovery?
It makes me feel old. But it is time. People always say, oh, time flies. It's like, it really feels like yesterday sometimes, you know, that I'm just like a student coming to CERN for the first time and thinking, oh my gosh, what am I even doing here? You have all of this thing. I was like, why did they hire me? Like, why did they believe in me? It's kind of a weird thing when you find yourself in a place where you didn't imagine your wildest dreams that you could be there. And then suddenly I'm still doing this. I'm like still here at CERN and still doing all this kind of fantastic research. It sometimes is unbelievable. It's just really like, am I dreaming? Is this really happening to me?
Dias found out about the Higgs discovery during the internal unblinding meeting with the CMS team, where each of the CMS groups working on the Higgs search was presenting their results to the others for the first time. But the night before this big CMS unblinding event, all those different Higgs search teams held secretive mini-unblinding events in preparation. Joseph Incandela, who was leading the CMS experiment, was not able to attend all of them, so he joined in over the phone.
And everyone just erupted, and I heard them sort of shouting, and I said, send me the picture, send me the pictures. You send me the picture of the peak.
I want to see.
I want to see. And it's like, holy smokes, it's there. And so within 15 minutes, it all hit me. We've got so much work to do. This is now, you know, my life has changed.
The Higgs discovery motivated particle physicists in different ways. Victoria Martin, who's a professor of physics at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland and a collaborator on the Atlas experiment, was previously looking in slightly the wrong place for the Higgs boson. But that doesn't mean she gave up on her ideas after the discovery was made.
It actually gave me more motivation because I'm like, I'm pretty sure the Higgs boson decays into quarks as well as into what we saw in the discovery, which was photons and Z bosons. So we went back and we actually doubled down on that. It wasn't as glamorous anymore because it did seem really glamorous for that first month. It was back down to work, but it wasn't landing with a bang. It was landing back down with a spring in your step to kind of keep going.
One of the projects Martin is working on at the moment is part of the preparation to get the LHC started up for Run 3, which actually started collecting data on July 5th this year. Martin works on a trigger system that is required to filter out superfluous data from the proton-proton collisions at the Large Hadron Collider.
They collide every 25 nanoseconds, and we make a huge amount of data, most of which is pretty boring, because it's making something that we know about already. So, in fact, we don't keep all of the data. We throw most of it away, and we have to decide which parts to keep. And the trigger system is a system that in a couple of seconds makes, you know, keep, throw away, keep, throw away, keep, throw away. But we have to tell it what to keep. So we're kind of refining the selections that we use, the selection criteria to decide what to keep. And my job at the moment on Atlas is to help people with that. So I produce simulated data for them that shows them what the trigger will do, so they can check that it's doing the right thing, that it's making the right decisions.
Are you busier workload-wise in between runs, or do things get busier when a run is starting?
Right now, the software is getting updated every day. People find mistakes. People think, oh, we really need this extra feature. So every day we're waiting, like, do you need an extra sample now? So it's really busy with that now. So it's just that's getting everything in place. So when we actually start, things will be ready. So I think this is the hardest time, just as we're getting ready to run. And then right at the beginning of the run, where we might notice things have started not working. So I think the kind of, I don't know, 3 months before and the first 3 months of the run are probably the most busy time.
One of the other things that's happening in preparation for Run 3 is that a lot of the physicists working on ATLAS and CMS are heading out to CERN in Switzerland for meetings and final checks, like Sahal Yaqub. They're a South African physicist who was working with the ATLAS collaboration in 2012. Now, Yaqub is a professor at the University of Cape Town in South Africa, but they spend as much time as they can at CERN, which is where they were when I was speaking with them.
It's at this week as the LHC is starting up again after a 3-year shutdown, right? So the LHC has been shut down for about 3 years. There's a bunch of upgrades that have been going on. There's a detector that we're going to start taking like real data with for the first time. And so that's all super exciting. And we're all looking forward to what we're going to be able to do with all this new data once everything works. But of course, you know, whenever you spoke to me, it would be an exciting time, right? So now it's like, oh no, things are starting. It's an exciting time. But if you spoke to me next year, I'd be saying, oh yeah, we're looking at the first year of this new data at new energy, and there's lots of new challenges. So that's really exciting. And if we spoke, you know, in like 2 to 3 years, I'd be like, well, now we have more data than we've ever had before. So we can make statements with better statistical like probabilities. So it's a really exciting time. So it's kind of, there's always an exciting time.
Throughout their career, Yaqub has had a strong focus on supporting younger people in the field. And the Higgs discovery actually helped because it increased their visibility.
There were a small number of people from South African institutes who were authors on the Higgs discovery paper. And then an even smaller number of those people who were South African. And off the top of my head, like for academics, not students, the number of South African academics who were on the Higgs discovery paper, who were based in South Africa, was 2. And I was, off the 2, the only not white person, which makes a difference. And so in terms of being visible and being able to do things, it was really cool. And I think it was really helpful. You know, I remember I would be invited to talk about this to school groups or to undergraduate research conventions and stuff like that. And I would start talking about it. And there was one time it really like seemed to make a difference. Like I started a little bit and then I paused and I was like, oh, yeah, by the way, in case it's not clear, like I know I was studying overseas, I sound a bit American, but I'm South African. I grew up in Reservoir Hills, like 10 kilometers over there, that way. I'm one of you guys, and I'm one of the authors on this. Like I do this work, I studied, I did my undergraduate work in South Africa all the way up to my master's degrees, like you guys can too. And you feel the room change, and it was really nice.
One of the aims for Run 3 is to understand more about how the Higgs boson behaves. How heavy is it? Why is it at this mass? And how long does it live before turning into something else? These are just some of the questions that are floating around. But others are on the hunt for clues that might take the current understanding of particle physics in a different direction. But, says John Butterworth from UCL, the thing is, it's not obvious where to look for these clues. As I mentioned earlier, Butterworth has been involved with CERN since the 1990s, when the detectors were being built for the first time and the hunt for the Higgs started in earnest. There was a clear goal for the particle physics community at the time, find the Higgs boson, and complete the standard model of physics. But now?
This is the first time where there is not a clear to-do list. Right. It's the first time in my career, really, that experiment has actually been ahead of the game in the whole thing. There are obviously a to-do list of unanswered questions, but there's no clear guide to how you answer them. So in a way, you could say on the one, from a theorist point of view, it's like they're reduced to just exploring. And from an experimental point of view, it's, yes, we're just exploring, kind of. So it's an interesting situation in the field, actually. It takes people different ways, but I find it quite exhilarating. The risk is, of course, that you may explore and just find more standard model. That's definitely true. Could happen, maybe likely to happen, but still you're seeing things that no one ever saw before. And to me, that's the excitement of experimental physics in such a fundamental frontier. That whatever you find, no one knew it before. Even if what you find is the standard model still agrees, no one knew that until you did the measurement. So, you know, that's still, to me, that's really exciting still.
So we really feel like we are just sitting in the edge of like discovering something else, which is big. And we have no idea which direction this is going to be, which is usually the case. And I think this feeling really drives us, like, okay, I don't want to be the scientist who retired at the very end of this edge before we discover something. Yeah, we really want to be living in the age where we understand there's something else new, and then we try to investigate it. So that would be really, really the dream, right?
A big thank you goes to South African guitarist Derek Gripper, whose piece Jarabi, which means passion, you've been listening to alongside this podcast. The piece was composed by Malian musician Tumani Jabate. Thanks for listening to This Is Physics. I'm Julie Gould.